All right. Hi and welcome to Reward-Based Riding. This is a podcast about creating balance using reward-based training techniques. I'm your host Angelica Heselius, and in today's episode, we're gonna dive a little bit into the very, very, very big subject of straightening our crooked horses using reward-based training techniques, of course, and how that can look. I know it's been a long time no see. Been really busy this spring teaching together with Do in our reward-based horse academy, the 8-week trainer toolbox course. Really, really fun course to teach, all about focusing on the human part of the horse and the human in the training. So been such a nice experience meeting people from all over the world and talking reward-based training, of course, also equally intense, and creating and teaching together. That's a very, very, very hard to keep up with for quite some time. So I've just been taking a couple of weeks off and mainly focus on my horses. And I've also been renovating a little bit at home. You see me, if you are watching on YouTube, you see my new office, and well, it's not done, but it's never been more done than now. So yeah, very happy about that. I'm working with my study group this summer and trying to put the halt course, the first part of the halt course, the parking part, together for this autumn, and later this winter I hope to have the movement part in halt up as well. So really excited for that, but yeah, best leave no promises. I'm gonna try to be a bit more consistent with the podcast and really have a lot of episodes that is already in the works and recorded, but I need to get to them. And yeah, that's it. I think that's it for the updates. It's a really hot summer in Sweden. So most of our training has been surrounded around things, stress grass in the sun, a lot of insects, and you know what it is to have a horse. But let's go back to Ellen. For those of you who have met me, Ellen is a horse of mine. She was a part of my horse family already when I crossed over to positive reinforcement, and I was already educating her in dressage, and she was, and I already helped her to become reasonably straight with negative reinforcement, using negative reinforcement training techniques. But when we crossed over and the initial process, we didn't focus much at all on her physical balance, more on her emotional balance. So that was kind of stressful to me, because it's been such a huge part of our training program initially. And she was a horse. I mean, she was one, if not the most crooked horse I have met. Her preference for her right front leg and her left bend was super high, and she needed training, regular training, to remain reasonably straight. So that was something that stressed me out a little bit when we crossed over, and I was keeping my old ways of working with her. Yeah, I introduced the foundation behaviors early, of course, in Liberty and stuff like that, and showed her, you have a choice, you have a say here. My colleague Ava Bertelsson and her colleague Emily Johnson-Vague, in their work, Carpe Momentum, they have like this priority list, list of priorities in training, which is attitude, direction, precision. And well, I didn't know those words, but that was a little bit of how I went about the training back then. And I focused solely on her attitude and giving her a say in the training and giving her like, hey, you can opt out if you wanna. You don't have to do this. And when I did that, I tried to run the two systems side by side for a while, but the more choice I was giving her, and the reason I was running two systems side by side was solely because I thought it was so important for her to keep up with her physical balance. And my previous experience with not being consistent with her gymnastical part of the training had not ended so well, and quickly deteriorated physically. So, and as most of us know that has trained gymnastical behaviors, I mean, they do affect the emotional balance. Physical balance and emotional balance go hand in hand in most reasonable ways of training. So I've already helped her quite a bit because she was super stressed when she first came to me. But I never ever given her, well, I thought I did, but when I really did ask her, do you want this? She was like, no, I actually didn't like that. And I quickly, which was all to my benefit because I quickly needed to literally shape up and be a better trainer for her and stop my old system and just adding treats to that, so to speak. Can work for some horses, but didn't for us at all. So, long story short with that, just needed to find ways to work with her that she said yes to. And I'm all the better trainer for it, so I couldn't be more thankful for her being super clear about what she thought works for her and giving her the possibility to say F off, you know, I don't want to do this. Really, really brought another dimension to our relationship. And I actually thought we had a good relationship, but it developed so much deeper after that. And she started to really be invested in her training. I mean, in a different level. She could move really nicely before that too. But as I experienced it, that was not in the way that I later saw her move, where she herself push the criteria more than me, like, hey, can you do a little bit more? So for me, that attitude shift was huge. And I think, yeah, letting her have a say and be a more active participant in her own training, really, that was like the whole part of it and the game changer. Yeah, of course, it's very beneficial to also break down the exercises in smaller pieces. But if the attitude, if the horse does not really appreciate the movement, and there are, I mean, I do meet many horses that has had experience from movement where they didn't really had a say in. You need to move now. It's for the best. That was at least my approach to it. But I'm calling the shots here. So that, of course, create a little bit of balance. And I did a really interesting experiment when it comes to that, because my old trot cue was Trava, and well, she was very light on the aids, and well, she trot 9 times out of 10 when I asked her to with my verbal cue, but that was taught with negative reinforcement and escalating pressure. So that was in that cue's behavior history, and so I taught her a new cue, just free shaping movements around the round pen, where I tried to be a very, very passive part and just reinforced bigger movements in walk and later on build towards. Do you want to move in trot as well? Then I put a new cue on that one, and she showed me such a difference between those two cues. And that's a pretty simple experiment that we can do if we are uncertain of if we have some poisoned cue and stuff like that. Just to train the same behavior and put in a different way. That's of course the prerequisite, but putting a new cue on it. So pretty clear that I needed to make her invested in the training, in her physical training as well. So partly why I have the dialect I have today, partly of course because I come from, I was really interested and invested in classical dressage and academic art of riding already before, and I was teaching dressage. I already had students and was training other people's horses, so that was like good for me because I did know what I was looking for. But I didn't know how I was going to create the movement. And I think that's where I see most of my students and in general, like, yeah, I know what I'm looking for. Or maybe that's also something we need to learn. But often we know at least some of the parts that we want our horses to do, but not how can we set them up to succeed and doing it. So for me, a lot of our work in the beginning was me trying to figure out how to create a bit of a dressage movement so I can help you become straighter because, yes, your attitude is so much better. But yeah, you're relaxed, very relaxed and invested in training, but crooked. So yeah, that was a very much a first task of mine once we went fully positive reinforcement, so to speak. So that was definitely a process in my training. But yeah, targets, of course. I am, for those of you who have seen my work, you know I'm target heavy in my shaping in the beginning. Back then, that was like considered something not so clean. Like, yeah, sure, you can get the behavior with target, but you should get rid of it as quickly as possible. And really, that's not my view at all. I think I'm always keeping my target shaping as one option of doing a behavior. And I want several options. And I always want to go down back in my build-up of the behavior for some cleaning and stuff like that. But back then, working that much with specific nose target and stuff like that wasn't too common, but it took me quite some time to get to some precision in this work. Partly because we both were new on our dialect, of course, but environment setups. My then trainer, Carolina Fransson from Sweden. She did work with setups in the environment, and really for me, her teaching me a new way to think that was groundbreaking in my in how I build behavior up, and teaching a new way to think took me quite some time. Not to you know how we usually train. We bring our horses to a naked riding arena, and then we create behaviors. Here, the environment creates behavior, and that's a huge difference. And partly, I think, why I managed to change her attitude quite quickly, because none of the behaviors really came from me. They came from the environment, and she was heavily invested in her mat. I had a doormat. I had several doormats for her to create some movements. Just sending her away from me towards a mat, and she actually walked super straight to that. So I mean, all I had to do there was click. But yes, in the end, I wanted, of course, to add some more nuances and working more towards dressage behaviors. But that was initially a super easy way for us to create some movement. Of course, we also did some nose targeting, her following a no nose target. And that is a really, really good into creating some bend and some flexion at the pole. She was also really stiff in her neck, and that was something I actually worried a little bit about not being able to do. So I was kind of quick with I used the caviezone a lot in my previous work. So I really tried to be quick with switching from the caviezone target to my hand as a caviezone, so she would target her head in my hand, and I could work a little bit by placing my hand in different direction to help her with her neck stiffnesses. I mean, that was the first target I think I developed like that, and I'm not working that much with it nowadays. I think I'm more invested in different kind of targets, but it was hugely helpful back then. And yeah, I mean, just working with treats in our training session to have our horses chew quite regularly, I think that is immensely helpful for also the relaxation part and also for the lower jaw in relation to the upper jaw, creating a lot of movements like that. I love that. But yeah, targets were super important. And this whole idea also that she could start behaviors and I could just tag along, that she could be a little bit more independent. If we take the shoulder in, for example, which was an exercise that really, really, really benefited her, and an exercise that I tried to teach her the whole exercise with the help of the nose target in the beginning, but also sending her to a stationary target after the long side. So she really, okay, this is how you move in this fashion. You place the shoulder a little bit inside the track, and your inside hind leg is on the track. So I really wanted her to get the whole picture of the movement, so she could use this at the whole behavior. That created a little bit of a context. Okay, this is shoulder in, and that helped her really loving it. I can do shoulder in, and you know, when I did a cue for shoulder in, she was really, really keen to perform it and both do it on her own. But also that context created a little bit of the, so I could work with more. We don't want the shoulder in to look one way. We want to be able to nuance it down or up or whatever to suit the needs the horse have that day. So I needed to also install some more precision aids, but in the beginning that wasn't important because the benefit of the shoulder in could still help us. So returning to the attitude, direction, precision that I was talking a little bit about in the beginning, that was really to make sure her attitude was always happy to be in the riding arena, or if she wasn't, she could leave and come another day. You know, that really giving her the opportunity to say no thanks shifted her investment in the training, and the control she had over whether she wanted to train or not really, really deepened our relationship together. So yeah, I couldn't be more happy about that setup. And yeah, we could talk a lot about how that actually looks, but that's not the topic for today. But creating a say in whether we want to do this or not, I think when we are working with physically demanding behavior, that especially if we're going up the levels and want to do a bit more advanced work, I think that should be the prerequisite for doing that, that the horse actually can leave or do other behaviors that is also reinforced, so the treat, the rewards are not getting coercive in that sense. So that of course, with that said, I have done several episodes where I have talked about pause and connection and how important those core skills are for us in the beginning. So do recommend you, if this is your first episode, well, welcome, happy to happy to have you. But if you want to know more about those concepts, there are episodes bringing that up. So back to this then, and owning the exercise for her, that was also such a super important thing. Working a lot also once that was set with a little bit more body part targets, I think we should really stay with the kick-ass foundation behaviors before we add too much nuances into the game. But with this said, that was already done, so you have to picture a horse that had some foundation behaviors going here. But body part targets, that, I mean, the cavesson target I was talking a bit about, that was a target that I was doing when I was walking backwards in more of the front position. I was in front of the horse searched for my hand, I was walking. Later on, also, if I wanted to help her with her shoulder imbalance, which was huge, she was very, very much on the forehand. I mean, all horses are, and they should be, but to help her also become better at being a horse in the paddock, that was a huge thing, because when she moved in the paddock, well, that wasn't exactly healthy movement. And yeah, not all horses are as crooked as her, but still, to give our horse the first priority, well, we have them in captivity to help them in the environment we put them. That is for me also a very, very good thing that I want to give my horse. We built from there, but the shoulder imbalance, that was, I mean, her right shoulder, she favored her right shoulder in most context. As soon as I didn't keep up with the training, she reversed to her natural imbalances and her very left bended as well. So to help her a little bit about that, working with mats as targets, doormats that she could also addressing a bit of a shoulder movement and working to different directions with her shoulders, and hoof targets that she could, you know, Spanish walk, if you know that movement where the horses lift their front legs and really, really high and walk like that. Preferably the hind end is a part of the equation as well. But that was also a movement that really, really, really helped her evolve some balance between her shoulders. And just the body part targets also in their nature, they make horses very body aware. So it's not that maybe you need the full version of every movement, for example, the Spanish walk here. It still will be very, very beneficial to address it in training. Same with the hip target, that the horses knows to move their hip towards you. Yeah, you also want a cue that asks your horse to move away, but that should be what you start with. But to later on ask for movement towards you with both the shoulder and the hind legs, for example, in a launch position, that can make wonders. Also, just using the cues so the horse is in liberty here. I love working in liberty. And nowadays, tack is the last thing that I put on my horses. I first educate them in liberty so they actually know. And this is very much thanks to both Ellen and my Icy that I'm working with now, Frody. He's developed this dialect much deeper, but really I owe it to them how I work today. And I think there's so much we can do just by being a bit more specific about, hey, do you know that body part? Can it be a part of the equation here? And really, horses can be so nuanced in this, and it's so much fun when they explore their own body here. Yeah, I really think maybe we should stop here today and continue on before it goes too long with show a little bit more about the tools we were working with and how we ended up here. So, all right. Thanks if you stayed all the way here.